You're listening to Robert Martinez, the apartment rock star. Robert is a national award-winning real estate brand influencer and entrepreneur whose company, Rockstar Capital Management, was recognized as the 15th fastest growing company in Houston by the Houston Business Journal. In addition to his 11 100% refinance cash out events, his company has earned 15 city, state, and national apartment association awards.
All right. Wow. Super excited to be here with Brandon Brown. So we're in episode 3 of the Apartment Rockstar. And today we have Brandon Brown. Brandon Brown is a close and dear friend of mine. He's with LMI Capital and he's the money guy. You know, when you start your investment journey, you can't just go out there and decide, I'm going to buy an apartment complex. Yeah, that one looks really good. It's beautiful. It's pretty. Oh, by the way, it costs $25 million. And you start calling the broker or calling whoever's in charge of the literature to get information on it. And, you know, they're not going to take your call because you're not qualified. You're an unknown. Well, you've got to get known. You got to get qualified before you even start your search. You got to build your professional team. And the very first person you need to build your professional team is your money guy. I've been fortunate to know Brandon Brown going back to, well, I think we officially started working with each other in 2011, but I'd known you for a year or two before. Mm-hmm. And just a quick little story on how I met Brandon. When I got involved into the apartment world, you know, I wanted to buy my first deal. And I was told I couldn't do it. I was told that I couldn't do it unless I had a co-signer. I couldn't do it unless somebody with a higher net worth than me would be able to do it. And what I didn't know, it was that person didn't want me to do it. You know, and I relied on their knowledge. I relied on their experience and our friendship. And, you know, in the end, I had the net worth to do it, but I couldn't do it. So instead of doing my first deal in 2008, you know, on the first deal that I really wanted to do that made a fortune for us, it really wasn't until 2010, 2011 when I got to do my first deal. And, you know, I lost a couple of 3 years off of the velocity, off of the, you know, like off the train tracks. And I just wondered, like, what we could have done, how this process could have gone a little earlier for me. You know, but in the end, it was Brandon Brown who I called. And, you know, Brandon, I'll be honest to say, the person said, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about and blah, blah, blah. You know, he doesn't know anything. You need to be working with this guy, you know, and it was all just a big sham, man. And I just think about, like, wow. So Brandon was the one that actually gave me the confidence in the beginning to first get started and, like, you know, buy my first deal. And you can do it. You don't need a co-signer. You know, you've got the track record. You've run, you know, all these units and you've got a successful, you know, resume on there. I can sell that, you know, and I think that's the key is you got to have a team, because when you're getting into this, you know, into this apartment world, you don't know anything and you got to find out. You got to find people that have been in the business that have a little bit of a resume above yours and can show you, hold your hand a little bit, you know. And for me, the very first person was Brandon Brown. So Brandon, before I forget, thank you so much. You know,
very welcome.
You know, you were like the first piece of that puzzle that we wouldn't be here today. I mean, today we've got our 19 apartment deals and 3,243 units and all the awards and all that. None of that would have happened had you not given me the confidence to believe that I could do it. So I'm super, super excited to have you here on episode 3. And I want you to help teach other people,
yeah,
you know, and give them the confidence that,
sure,
that they can buy their first deal. So Brandon, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Brandon Brown. I'm managing partner with LMI Capital. We're a boutique debt and equity firm here in Houston, Texas. We do deals wherever sponsors take us. And I've been doing this since 2001. As Robert said, we met probably in 2009 or 10 and started talking a little bit. And we primarily specialize in this workforce housing, B and C apartments. We do our share of A's, but multifamily is pretty much our dominant product that we do year in, year out. Last few years, we're hovering right around that $500 million mark as far as production, somewhere in that 65 to 70 transactions a year, and predominantly, once again, multifamily business. So,
yeah.
As a boutique shop, we are very nimble. There's not a loan product that we represent. We represent them all. That's really what it boils down to. People come to us all the time and say, hey, I'm buying this deal. I want to get this loan. And the first thing I say is, well, let's take a step back and let's talk about the business plan. What are you trying to achieve? Because if your exit strategy is 2 years, well, then we do not want 10-year financing, for instance. So when we met, you came to me, and I think that's where you were at. You were wanting to know, what could I really go achieve? And I think you were being told, this is the box that you're in. And I felt like, no, we should be able to expand that dramatically. You know, you mentioned a very key component, which was experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of first-time buyers will come to me with not a lot of real estate experience, but they do have business experience, sales experience, managing people experience, which is kind of the business, right? So yes, the net worth and liquidity and that financial strength plays a role, but there's also some other components that allow us to go sell why you should be successful. And in your instance, you had already been an operating partner and running a couple thousand units.
2,000 units.
So what's better experience than that? How can you be told, I can't go do this?
Yeah.
We're approached by a lot of people that have rent houses or duplexes, or I've got a 10 unit property and maybe they've done well. Maybe they've sold a business recently in another platform that's not real estate oriented, but that does play a role in how we can help them be successful to go out there and achieve that first 50, 60, 100, 200 unit property.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to hit a couple of points. First of all, you said boutique a couple of times. You know, boutique to me means small. You know, I think you're going to get a little more customer service, a little handholding. Mm-hmm. I definitely got that in more than my share of that. I think it was amazing how you helped me through the process. But boutique means small. You're doing $500 million. A year in origination, that's a lot, guys. I don't know. Most of my loans are anywhere between $4 million and $8 million, you know, and he's doing $500 million. That even sounds like to me based on the velocity that I know you're doing. So, you know, that's just amazing to me that you're able to do that. So, you know, I don't know if you're small compared to like Bank of America, maybe, but I think, you know, when you're first getting started, you definitely want somebody that wants to grow with you. And I know you want to grow. You know, I'm a natural sales guy. I built sales teams. I can sell myself. But you know what? If you don't know how to sell your resume and you don't know how to sell what you've done. I mean, I had 2,000 units. You know, we had won a few awards. But more importantly, we had like 5 refinance, 100% refinance events that I had done, you know, and that I was in the operating arm for. Those aren't even part of the 11 that I've done with Rockstar. But I didn't know how important to sell that. I didn't understand that from the lender's side, they want to hear that resume. They want to know that, hey, maybe you don't have the net worth, you don't have the millions of dollars, you know, that matched the loan amount at that time, but you have this successful track record.
Sure.
You know, how important is that, Brent? I mean, how do you present that to the lenders?
You know, it's very important. I mean, if we're talking about someone that has a track record that's done a few deals, you know, and let's just say in that 100 unit variety, and they've been very successful and they're trying to make that leap. You know, when it comes to qualification of net worth and liquidity, those are the two main components, right, that we're looking at with lenders. Those are guidelines for the most part, right? I tell people all the time, it's more of a guideline. It's a very gray area. It's not black and white. It's not you have to have net worth of X or we're not even going to talk to you, right? At the end of the day, the real estate is really going to be the majority of the qualification for this. It's income producing. We've got the rents coming in, expenses out. What's my NOI? Can the property service the debt? I'm not making you a home loan and looking at your personal cash flows, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking at the asset first. So then the net worth and liquidity and the experience come in to help support the asset is kind of how I like to look at it and pitch that. And so experience in my mind, when you're really talking to these guys and I'm talking to multiple lenders, the good lenders, the guys that I've been working with in the business for a while, they get it. And they're going to make that stretch to build that relationship to help you grow. And as we've done here of late in the last year or so, we've met with strategic people that are allowing you to continue to grow and understand more about what you're really doing. And, you know, helping sell that even today, we're seeing the benefits of it.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. I remember when I got started, Brandon helped me out with that very first deal, which was Nordlake Manor Apartments in 2011. You know, really excited about that deal, right? Because that was one deal. And this is how good Brandon is, right? I had my experience, but this is still a heavy, heavy, dirty deal with all the fleas and everything you can imagine. It had been foreclosed twice in the previous 10 years. Section 8 kind of residence all throughout. A manager walked in there. She's tattooed out, right? I mean, it is what it is. You know, fast forward 7-8 years now, that property just got ranked in the top 1% of out of 101,000 communities.
Right.
So to go from a property that had been foreclosed twice in the previous 10 years to 7-8 years later, not only be a monster moneymaker, probably one of our best.
I've heard you say that multiple times.
Our best moneymaker.
It's not the sexiest, but it's been the biggest cash flow.
She's not the prettiest one in the lineup. But man, she... You know, we can have an off month and she's still going to kick out cash. But I'm just so, I never thought about it. And so, you know, when it's a ward, you know, that wow, from basically, you know, bottom of the barrel to now in an elite top 1% next to Class A properties, next to recently built properties, next to the best in our portfolio. Yeah. What a transition. None of that would have happened had you not told me I could do it. You know, so that, I mean, it's just amazing. That's what I say. It's like, you are where you are in life today because of the decisions and the experiences that you've learned. And you were definitely there in the beginning of the Rockstar Capital journey. And I mean, again, I can't thank you enough on that. But for the everyday person, right, who doesn't have, you know, who hadn't been in the business four or five years, who didn't have 2,000 units of experience and gone through, you know, refinances. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're talking to me and I didn't have that. And I was an oil and gas guy. I sold technical equipment. I was good at it. I had a little bit of a sales background. I managed teams, you know, but I'd never done that. How would you guide me through this process? How would you help present me to the lender?
Sure. So a lot of times I'm getting calls from people that are making that step into real estate. Maybe they've invested with a few people and now they want to do it on their own and they're calling to get qualified. And I always tell them that, you know, I'm really not qualifying you as much as I'm doing a feasibility study.
Yeah.
And that feasibility study is really just to try to determine what makes sense for you, whether it be really your borrowing power, right? And your borrowing power as an individual is really going to be tied to that net worth and liquidity. The past experience is what's going to help me go sell you that you can be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so really your buying power is really what determines whether it's a dollar amount. So then we're going to back into kind of the number of units based upon a certain value, whether it's a value add kind of deal or whether it's, you know, more just yield play kind of property. But ultimately, that's really what we're backing into. And what I really try to educate people on and really hopefully listen to my advice, which is, you know, everyone wants to step into 250 units day one, but it's really hard to do that without one, the net worth and liquidity, but two, the experience of running that size property. So really I'm just trying to manage the right expectations so that they're not spinning their wheels and it hadn't been 18 months and they still haven't done their deal. It's more or less setting the right expectations, go be successful. And then maybe in 18 months, they're on their second deal already, which might be a little bit larger because now net worth is better. Liquidity is a little bit better. We've got that experience. We've got it on the balance sheet. So a lot of times it's hard to tell them this, but a lot of times in the end result is positive. And what I mean by that is we've set the right expectations. I might have knocked it down from what they wanted, but they've done a deal. Whereas the other guy that was still trying to fit the square peg in a round hole, still trying to find that first deal.
You know, I hope everybody's listening carefully because everything he's saying is literally gold coming out of his mouth right now. Because I remember, you know, after you and I worked on that first deal, you know, I didn't have a big portfolio. You know, I'd come from 2,000 units and now I'm running 100 and, you know, like 118 units and a 126. I'm like, I got time. I can do what you're doing. You know, I can save the investor. Because, you know, you charge for your services. You charge 1% of the loan amount. So on a $2 million deal, it's going to be a $20,000. You know, on a $5 million deal, it's $50,000. You know, I'm like, you know what? I can save my partnership, my investors, that money. Let me go and put together my own package. And on the next deal, I didn't see the value of our relationship as much as I certainly do today. And I went out there and I tried to like present it. And it's a lot of work.
It is.
And there's a lot of back and forth. And I'm like, man, I'm taking my eyes off the ball. My ball is to operate apartment complexes.
Sure.
My ball is not to go out there and try to talk to lenders. I mean, how am I going to talk to Bank of America? How am I going to go and talk to, to a big CMBS lender, you know, or to, you know, Chase or whom Wells Fargo Smart Loans are through, you know, because I don't speak the language well enough,
right?
And so I started to realize after one or two deals, like, one, is a lot of work to have to go back and forth and sell yourself. Two, I'm not keeping up. I'm not presenting myself in the way I need to. I'm doing it like the mom and pop way, and I'm probably leaving money on the table. I'm probably not getting the loan dollars that I can be getting. I'm not getting the best rates or the best terms that I can get because I don't know how to present what it is I'm trying to do, you know? And so I learned that very quickly. I think maybe deal four, I was like, you know what? It was a loan assumption. I had no choice but to use you because these guys were like asking for all this. I talked to a friend of mine, Curtis Haynes, and he had gone through some loan assumption process and he just scared the crap out of me. You know, like, dude, it's this. I'm like, oh, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Brandon, what's going on? We haven't talked in a while, you know? And so But I'm telling you, there is so much going on. You need to have somebody to hold your hand and sell you and present you to the lender in the right way, because you only get one impression to do it.
That's right.
You know, if you present the wrong way, you know, that rate of return may go from, you know, you were thinking you're going to get 10% or 9% return, and all of a sudden you're getting 7 or 8 because you're not getting the best terms. Right. You know, it's interesting. You make your money in real estate in a few ways. Number one, the price you pay, right? All the money you make in real estate happens right there. It happens on the price you pay, on the location, and the terms you get. And if you don't get the same terms as the other guy and you bought the same exact kind of deal, or he bought across the street, he can has more flexibility to do things that you can't do, and you're going to hurt on it operationally down the line. Let's say you run through some sort of economic crisis, and in year two, and you have a 2-year interest only loan that you're in. I mean, you have a loan that has the first 2 years of interest only, but it's a long recession. All of a sudden you got that principal kicking in at the end of year two or year one. I know a lot of guys, they only get 1 year IO, right? And you don't have that extra flexibility to withstand that storm. And now all of a sudden you're kicking more money out of your reserves to cover the mortgage, right? When if you had someone like you, you would have gotten 3 years IO. You could have gotten 5 years IO. Mm-hmm. Speaking of it, it's my Green Meadows, right? I was looking at the numbers yesterday. Right. That's actually one you're invested in with us, right? Do you bother to go back and look at your numbers and see how well it's doing and all that?
Every now and then when I pull up the, when I go to the dashboard of the capital management site, it'll show me.
So okay. That's so about... do you know how much money you made on that deal?
No, not really.
Okay, so we bought this deal in 2015. It was a $4.1 million equity raise. And Brandon was able to work out 5 years at IO on this. It was a CMBS loan. At that time, the market was a little off, right? And I'm going to give everybody this story. You know, the market was a little off, and CMBS was a really good deal versus, you know, a Freddie or Fannie Mac.
Yeah, agency wasn't quite there.
Yeah, there you go, Fannie loan. And we got 5 years IO, right? I was doing the numbers. I called Sam up the other night, like, hey, Sam, we raised 4.17. Make sure I'm doing this number, the math on this, right? And we took the NOI. I applied the cap rate, and I came up with a $22 million valuation. Now, that's gross. That's not fees. That's not anything. Just, it's worth $22 million today, which would be like $91,000 a door. I'm going back, subtracting out what we owe, 11. So now we got $11 million. I can see your eyes lighting up. You haven't done the math yet. $11 million. The investor equity was $4.1 million. We have $7 million in that deal. That means I figured it's like just shy of a 300% return, and we're in the IO period.
Sure.
We still got 2 more years of IO in this baby.
Plus the dividends that I've been paying.
Plus the money you have, plus we got like half a million in the reserve account. You know, there's a lot of upside, right? But I mean, how great is it when things are kicking good? Because it wasn't always like that. We had some issues at that property for a while. It was so great to have that extra flexibility. Now we were able to punch through the uncertainty in the economic times. Mm-hmm. And now we're just kicking back. I think we're at 90%, mm-hmm. which is for me on the lower end of my portfolio. But the debt to service ratio is like 2.99. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not even anywhere close to where I want it to be. And we're just still optimizing. We're still making it better. And it's just like, it's the gift that keeps on giving, right? Because you have another 2 years of interest only, which means I don't have to spend another $10,000, $12,000 to the lender. That goes back to the investor's pocket.
Sure.
And that wouldn't have happened if I didn't sell myself right, or if you hadn't sold yourself right mm-hmm. to the lender. So, you know, again, all the money you make in real estate happens on the day you close. What did you pay? Where did you buy it at? And what terms did you get?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I remember that deal when we shopped it at the time. Fannie and Freddie just weren't quite 100% back into Houston yet on leverage. And more importantly, IO, like you mentioned. The CMBS market was really moving. And, you know, one of the hardest things I have to do in my business is pick up the phone and call 5 guys and tell them, hey, you didn't win the deal.
Yeah, oh, that's hard.
Right?
That's a whole other conversation. And that was, I'm glad I don't have to do
and
that.
And that was
break hearts.
And that was this deal. I mean, that's what happened on this deal. You know, you mentioned and just to kind of dovetail on the interest only component. And I thought this is where you were going, and you went to Green Meadows instead of Park at Deerbrook.
Could have, but Green Meadows just got my attention because we're making the killing.
But the Park at Deerbrook instance, where we had 2 years of IO on a bridge loan, where we were doing some improvements, and the property was not only operating at a successful level, but coming up on the 2-year mark, you guys called and said, hey, it's not only doing good, but it's doing better than we ever thought. Mm-hmm. There's some things we're doing now that are still driving her in an extra $50 or $60. Mm-hmm. And so we went back to the lender mm-hmm. and we negotiated for them to extend the IO period for another year.
I remember that.
Because we told them that this extra savings of X a month, we're going to put that back into the property, and here's what we've been doing.
And they love that. You see,
and one, they loved it, but two, they had the confidence you were going to do it. Why? Because on the initial loan, you did more than you said you were going
to
do.
But what you're saying, that I want to interrupt you, because I don't mean to do that, but this is really important. I don't think that I could have presented that, because I wouldn't have known that when you reinvest back into the deal like that, they get giddy, right? Because technically, nobody owns the property. You're renting it. You're renting it from the guy who owns it, and it's called the bank.
Sure, sure.
It's the same thing. You have a house. If you don't own it outright, you don't own
They're
it.
Your partner,
the bank
basically.
Own it, because you know how they know how I know that? You miss a payment, they let you know that they own it, right? Yeah, yeah. And so it's the same way in the apartment world, right? So I would not have known that if we took cash flow and say, hey, I'm going to go do another capital improvement project, but I need a little bit of help. You know, can you? I would have known that. And having you on board as that valued partner, you know, on that professional team, you knew that. That's something you probably have done 100 times, you know?
Sure. I mean, it never hurts to have that good relationship. And that's why I'm always, you know, I've told you multiple times that, you know, just us building relationships in the industry, you're going to benefit from it in the long run. It might not be this deal today, but it might be the deal in the future.
All right.
There's always that one.
So you talked about two different deals. There are obviously two different business models as well, right? So mm-hmm. let's talk about when you're getting started with somebody for the first time. You gotta, once you figure out what it is that they can qualify for,
right.
Half a million, a million, two, three, that's the number of units, right? You gotta create your box. What is your box that you wanna, you know, create? What part of town do you wanna mm-hmm. be? How many units, you know, are you looking to try to get, you know, and you know, what can you qualify for? And by the way, you need around 50 units if you want to get some help on property, meaning a full-time manager, because otherwise you're going to trade your day job for running that property on the weekends, and it's going to be difficult because you're going to be doing all this time. And, you know, I wouldn't trust anybody on site that give them rent money and you give them a rent discount. That never works. That's a bad combination. You know, I think if you're going to do this, you know, you can do a few units and it's kind of like you're just having a bunch of rent houses that you're working. But if you get any kind of skill, 50 units. That's just a segue, a side note there. But once you have the business model, what are the kind of loans available out there? I know
this is part back to my comment about expectations mm-hmm. and telling them maybe not what they want to hear, but it's what they need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the reality of it is, you know, you're going out and you're buying 50 units or 100 units because you can afford that property and that asset. Well, in that instance, most likely traditional bank financing is probably your avenue. I mean, that's what you did.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people
That's called
do.
Bridge debt.
Bridge debt, bank debt, whatever you want to call
Explain
it.
Explain that a little bit for
everybody. Interim financing. And all that really means is you're not getting a 10, 15-year fixed rate loan, 12-year fixed rates like we've done on a lot of these agency deals. You're just going to have to go in and do something a little more shorter term. Typically 5 years is what the banks will offer. You're probably signing recourse, right? You're probably not getting the best fixed rate in the market that someone with a few thousand units is going to go get. And you just have to have the right expectations that it's really kind of a foot in the door. But that's what the community banks and the local banks are there for. That's probably the financing you're looking at outside of what we would consider just small balance world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Fannie and Freddie that everyone always wants to talk about in the small balance world. They both have programs in that, you know, 1 to 5 to 7 million range. But the reality is they do want to see a little bit of experience in real estate to kind of go qualify for that. So expectations need to be, you know, we're going to go do some bank financing. We're going to sign some recourse. Sure, you can have friends and family if you're doing a little bit of a syndication. That's fine. There's not going to be a requirement that you put in all the equity. But that's probably what you're looking at out of the gate. Go do it, own it, manage it. And, you know, 12 to 18 months later, if you want to sell the asset and roll into a new one, you probably have better lending options for the next one. If you want to refinance it, you probably have better lending options for the next one. I mean, I could rattle off 20 different names that have lived that story that I still work with today. And today we have the full, you know, options on the table, depending on the deal. I mentioned it earlier, though, is when you're looking at property, don't try to back into a specific loan that you want it to work. That's just not feasible. We have to look at the asset for what it is, come up with our business plan, and then find the right product that fits it to help you get it there, really.
Yeah, I think you hit something really interesting. You know, one of the big, false truths, I guess, is that I'm thinking is that, you know, that property, that loan, unlike your home loan, unlike your car loan, is not based on the credit and wherewithal of Robert Martinez. It's based on the credit and the wherewithal of that apartment complex. More mm-hmm. so, which means that your credit score, surprisingly, is not as important. If anything, seems to me, I get more interest in my name. So a lot of times my attorney sends me a same name search. Sure. And of course, I've got a very common name, and there's a lot of drug dealers and a lot of bad people that have my name or owe a lot of money or child support or whatever. So right. That's the only time that my name or credit ever seems to come up with me is like, are you this guy? Do you own this city right. money? Do you own property taxes here?
Right.
Right. That has nothing to do with the loan though. That just has to do with just like, who are you? Right. And I don't remember ever seeing a credit score once.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, they're running a credit report on some of these loans. But this is it's income producing commercial real estate. Like we mentioned earlier, you know, I tell people all the time, if I have to break it down, I'm going to tell you that 80% of the deal is the property.
Yeah.
It's expenses. It's income. What are the rents? Where does it sit within the street? What are they doing across the street? What are they doing down the street? You know, how does this property fit within the submarket? What are its cash flows? What could they be? If we're buying something that we think's a little undervalued and has a little bit of upside, well, then we're going to use the market to sell all that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use your net worth to sell the property and what its potential is. The rest of the 20% is what I refer to as just the credit side. And by credit, I don't mean the credit report. I just mean your strength, your wherewithal, your style of management, your experience, all those things help support it. And so what you're talking about, though, are really the abstracts. They're not really a credit report. It's just pulling any data on that person to see, has there been any problem with them? That's not necessarily the credit report, but problem. I have a similar situation. My first name's Michael, so Michael Brown is pretty much
very common.
So I've had to sign that same line a few times that this is not me. So.
It's redundant now. It's like on everyone. I just like,
that's what it is.
Like, I know who I owe money from, an agency or county or you know, baby mama or something like that. Right? Right. I'm good.
Right.
I got it covered.
But while we're talking about qualifying, I will say just as a recommendation, if you will, is, you know, a financial statement is a financial statement. You've got your net worth, you've got your liquidity, make sure that's all put together and we show all the, you know, cash you have in the bank. But a lot of times I'm always asking for a resume or a bio.
Yeah.
And I don't need a resume as if you're trying to apply for a job for me. You know, sometimes I'm like, just even an email with 20 bullet points or 10 bullet points, just tell me something about you and your work experience, no matter what it is, and how that could relate to managing a multifamily asset, right? And if you managed 10 different restaurants and you oversaw those restaurants as a supervisor, well, you managed a lot of people at that point in time, and problems come up at a restaurant, I'm sure, just like they come up at an apartment complex, right? And so that's very applicable for me to take and go, you know, sell you versus regional manager on some little resume. You know, give me some bullet points about what you did.
Give me some color.
Week to week. Yeah, I have to have some. I can't, you know, I mean, I may be good at what I do, but what helps me be better is when I have that information. You know, give me the tools to help sell you.
Absolutely. I think that's critical. And again, I think it's another feather in your cap on why you're successful and why your company has grown the way it has. You know, going back to the type of loans here, you know, I remember when I got trained and educated on this, and there's, you know, for y'all listening, there's a lot of educational resources out there. There's a great groups here in Houston. There's groups in Dallas, there's groups in San Antonio, there's groups all over, right, where you can get some education. And I was always told that you always want to try to get that Fannie Mae 10-year, you know, permanent loan, right? And, you know, and you don't want to do bridge debt because you got to sign your name on the line and all that. You know, I think it's deal specific, right? It just determines on what that deal is. I mean, it's amazing that you guys, that there are deals out there that you could buy today and you can get a Fannie Mae loan on it, right? And you know, you're walking into a deal that's cash flowing day one yield, you know, it's not going to make the most amount of money, like maybe a value add deal, but it's a nice solid yield. It's in a great area. Fannie Mae is willing to do that loan, and you can walk into a non-recourse 10-year loan. Other deals, maybe a little rougher deal. Maybe you've got a business plan that includes a big, heavy CapEx program, a capital improvement program coming in, and you're going to change out ACs or roofs. You're going to, you know, add black appliances. You're going to do something that's going to give yourself a distinguishing mark against the rest of the community. Or maybe because you're a great manager of people, you can manage this property up and pay attention. The other guy was a doctor that lives in California and sight unseen. You know, he bought it 10 years ago. He's got a low basis. And so he doesn't care if it's operating in the 80s or the 70s because he bought it for,
perfect deal to buy.
And I love those. You're hearing it. You're licking your chops on that. Yeah, those are the perfect deals to buy, right? Because they don't know what they're worth either. That's the best part. And they don't know what the potential is. But, you know, that kind of deal, right? You may have to go get a bridge debt, a recourse loan.
Absolutely.
It's a 3-year, 5-year where I've got to sign my name on the line, right? But, you know, I don't mind those deals because today I didn't mind them then. I mind them then. I mind them now less. But then it's everything in the world. It's like your whole life there. And so you know what? You work a little harder. You guard it with your heart.
So this topic came up the other day about bridge debt. And my comment is it goes back to the property. The asset, the purchase, the business plan really should determine what you're going to go do with it. You mentioned a property, a guy's owned it 15 years, it's 97% occupied, it has cash flow going in. Well, that's great. The rents are $150 low.
Yeah.
And in today's market, they're selling on a price per pound for the asset. We're not buying on a 7% cap rate or anything crazy. There's no way. Mm-hmm. You find a 7% cap rate, we'll buy all cash now. They just don't exist, right? So we're buying it based upon what we think we're going to do with it. I don't want to say pro forma. You know, people say, oh, I'm buying it on pro forma. We're not really buying on pro forma. I'm looking at this asset for where it stands in the market, what its rents can be, and what I'm going to operate it like. How I'm going to staff it, my trash should cost this much, my services should be this much, everything down the line. Here's how I can achieve it. But to get it there, I need the right financing. So we can go get agency debt, but to get the property where we need to get it, and we can get agency debt. Why? Because we have the cash flow, sort of. But that's not the optimum performance here. We need to get that interim loan. We need something that's going to give us the leverage with the dollars to make the improvements and to get it where it needs to be. And so if you believe in the deal and the asset itself and where it's going and you're confident you can get it there, why not use the right vehicle of debt to get it there? Why say no to that debt only because, oh, well, it's risky to do because it's only a 3-year loan, you know, with an extension option on it. That's the most common bridge debt. 3 years with extension option. Or a 5-year loan with a bank that has that going in interest only component, of which then we're going to start looking at amortization and some look back on the debt coverage ratios and all those things. But at the end of the day, if you're going to buy it, then don't you believe in the asset and the plan in the first place?
Absolutely.
And so that's the right debt. The other piece of it is, there's a flexibility component. Once you get to that 2-year mark, working on that third year, and things are really starting to simmer and stabilize out, now we can take a look back and say, all right, what do we want to do? Because we're kind of free to do what we want to do. We're in agency world, as you know, we have to look at, well, it's either a supplemental loan, which we can do, and we achieve those, or there's probably some sort of penalty that's getting in our way from really making a quicker decision. And so that's the purpose of the debt. I mean, that's the purpose of the interim debt, is to get you in there, have flexibility. I mean, quite frankly, the last deal we did fit the box. Mm-hmm. But we chose the interim debt because we wanted ultimate flexibility.
Yeah, and I think that's great. You know, I think, I hope you're listening carefully because you need a partner like Brandon Brown, your team. And it's not a one and done. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience on every single deal, Brandon just doesn't work with me in the beginning. We get the loan and I don't talk to him again for 3 to 6 months. We're talking about the deal. I have a problem with, there's an email communication. Brandon's on the email when I'm talking to the lender. When we're talking about when it's time to refinance, Brandon's there. We're talking about when I'm looking for a new deal, you know, Brandon's there. I mean, like, Brandon, hey, I'm thinking about investing in this part of town. What do you know? Yeah, I've got so-and-so guy here. He seems to be doing really good. It's a really strong market. I mean, it's an educational resource, to have market data. You have all the latest CoStar and whoever else. You know where people are buying. You know what rents are going for. Mm-hmm. I know in this new market we're in, you know, the one of the players is there is like, you know, what he's getting is like, man, you can do this rehab and you can get even higher rents. And, you know, so, I mean, where else can you get that handholding from? It's not just finding you the right money or the right, you know, banking partner. Mm-hmm. It's being able to just like, hey, advise you. Like, these are what some guys are doing. Hey, have you thought about this on your rental improvements? Hey, you're the only one doing that. Tell me why that's an important part of your renovation. You know, I think that's big, really, really big. Brent, I'd like to end by, you know, telling everybody again, you this is what you do every day. I mean, sure. I'm here running apartments every day, and that's what I focus on. I'm not talking to the lenders every day. I know you just got back from the National Housing Multifamily Conference.
Sure.
And it was in San Diego every year. Tell me what you do there, and tell the audience what you've learned this conference.
Yeah, well, so first of all, I'll say that the one take back is that, you know, the market's very bullish, upbeat. Since started doing this in 2001, primarily what I've done is, you know, workforce housing, B and C assets, like what we're doing. We do our share of A's, but, you know, multifamily is just kind of the darling of the real estate market, I would kind of call it right now, primarily because of just housing, the Texas in general, let's say. I mean, our population growth, our jobs that we're adding. There's a lack of supply in a way of the single family side of things. There's a lot of good data out there that shows, the rental population is growing and home ownership want and desire is kind of on the decline a little bit. I think people would just rather rent. Mm-hmm. In this past cycle, starting in 2000, call it 10, when things started to move again, in Houston specifically. I mean, there's been thousands of units that were there in 2006 that are no longer there now. On top of those pieces of land are very high-end, either retail, mixed use, some multifamily. So all that does is strengthen this workforce housing that the sandbox you and I are playing in. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big, big believer. I think that topic came up multiple times in any sort of presentation. There was always a comment about this product and this housing. And there's really almost a need to kind of build that kind of product in a way, but no one really does it.
Yeah.
So
you can't build 1980 boxes, right? That are renting for $800 or $900.
I mean, look, fundamentals are good. That was one thing that just talking to guys that own properties, you know, at National Multi Housing, the main thing is it's a place where you can go and see everyone in the industry, especially guys that own property all over the country. And seems to me that fundamentals are pretty strong as a whole, as far as multifamily is nationwide. Just not hearing anything crazy going wrong out there for the most part.
So you're saying that if you're looking for an alternate source of trying to get some investment dollars, an alternate some sort of alternative to the stock market, you're saying everybody's bullish on multi housing.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Multifamily housing.
I mean, look, there's so many more real estate funds today than there were, and it's. And, you know, part of it can be just kind of the trend or that's where the market cycle's going. But, you know, year after year, these groups are outperforming any other kind of vehicle to go, you know, earn some money outside of, you know, the day job, if you will. Mm. So absolutely. It's here to stay. I mean, I really believe and the stats just make a lot of sense on why multifamily across the board is just going to continue to be, you know, supply and demand issue. That's all it really is.
You know, just for a lot of people listening, again, I do get it. I mean, I'm involved in the business. I do keep up. You know, it's just housing has gotten so expensive. You know, I'm sure I'd like to hear your comments on it, on why people's mindset are changing. But materials cost more, labor costs more. And guess what? When there's a great economy like there is right now, everything's going to cost more, right? I mean, sure. Oh, I got more money in my pocket. And that's great. But everything's going to start costing more too because labor's hard. When unemployment's at 4% or less, you know, there's just not available enough of staff, right? So you got to pay more and that trickles down and stuff, but that means everything costs more to build a new house, right? You know? So I know a lot of people that are looking for those homes, you know, my first home, I mean, a good starter home you could get for $100,000 to $120,000, you know, back in the day, brand new home. I mean, I heard the median average price now was what, 250 in Houston?
Right.
275.
Yeah, no, this comment's maybe from a Texas standpoint, which our affordability is changing. Mm-hmm. You keep hearing that. I hear that. I feel it. I see it. Just to your point, I mean, in the area that I live in town, values have doubled, tripled in the last however many years. It's just an affordability thing. Being in California for that conference and just hearing the prices there per foot for houses and whatnot, it just people, you know, if you're trying to buy your first house, you probably just don't have a few $100,000 sitting around to buy $1 million home.
Correct, because you're talking about 20% down.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, so the downstroke and whatnot. So I think at the end of the day, there's just also a little bit of feeling that, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with renting. And renting is becoming more preferred by a lot of, let's just say, Americans in general. I mean, I just think that's the case.
I totally agree. Brandon, it's been amazing to have you on this show. You know, I think it's been a wealth of knowledge. I hope everybody out there is listening to this again and again and sharing it with their friends, because I think this, you know, when I look back at all the podcasts, this will definitely be one of the ones I think people are like, wow, I got a lot out of that. Brandon, if I'm a first-time guy and I want to contact you, mm-hmm. I want you to help me maybe get started in my, you know, real estate career, maybe at least, you know, find out what it is I can qualify for. How sure. does somebody get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best thing to do is to send me an email at bbrown@lmicapital.com. And from there, set up a call, get some information, and just kind of start the process and help guide you.
Brandon, thank you so much for being on the Apartment Rockstar. This is just an amazing, amazing opportunity to be here with you. And I hope everybody else gets to, you know, pick your brain and call you, and maybe you can, you know, find some future people in here to lend some money to. But I mean, it just as in, just to have you here with me, you know, meaning what you mean to me, I really appreciate it. So thanks so much.
Very welcome. Very happy to be here.
Thank you. And that's it for the Apartment Rockstar today. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed episode 3. Episode 4 is coming soon.